We're checking in on Milwaukee's search for a new police chief on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The Fire and Police Commission said its goal was to name a chief by tomorrow. Final candidate public forum was held 11 days ago. The new chief will take over at a time of tragic violence, a year of record-high homicides in a department that must address systemic racism and bias in policing. Have you been following the search for a new police chief? Which one of the three finalists should get the job? What are the most pressing issues facing Milwaukee's police force? It's 800-642-1234. Elliot Hughes covers crime, public safety, and breaking news in Milwaukee and the surrounding area for the Journal Sentinel. Elliot, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Any indication how close we are to learning who the next chief will be?
Yeah, the Fire and Police Commission has a meeting set for tomorrow evening. They have an executive session at 4:30 where they are expected to hold a vote on the next chief, and then they have an open session scheduled at 5:30 where they are expected to make the announcement.
Is this an attractive job? How many people applied for it? What was this run-up like?
There were about 12 people who applied for it. It did attract quite an array of candidates, some traditional, some not traditional. And the Fire Police Commission did open a nationwide search here, which is not something that every police department in America does. And it's also not something that really a lot of residents here were in the mood for. After the tenure of Edward Flynn concluded in 2018, there are a lot of people who were more in the mood for homegrown talent after that. Flynn was the department's second outside hire, and now the FPC has identified three finalists. They're all outside candidates, so it appears that they'll make their third outside hire in the department's history tomorrow.
Yeah, outside candidates, meaning not only not from Milwaukee, not living here in Wisconsin. Some do have connections to Wisconsin, but this is definitely outside the city of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. So they've identified three candidates. The one with the most connections here is Hoyt Mahaley. He's a FBI supervisory special agent who's done a lot of work in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. He actually grew up in Milwaukee, spent most of the first 30 years of his life here, and got to start with the Milwaukee Police Department, but only spent about 5 years there.
Okay.
And then there's also Chris Davis. He's a deputy chief with the Portland, Oregon Police Bureau. He's a guy who's described himself as a progressive police leader, and he comes from an agency that dealt with a lot of pretty intense civil unrest this past summer. He has some family in Wisconsin. He's a native of Ohio. And then there's also Malik Aziz. He's a major with the Dallas Police Department. He doesn't seem to have any connections to the area. He's someone who's been attached to quite a few police chief openings across the country this year and in years past. He's someone who's really touted his community engagement efforts. And so back to Mahaley, even though he's someone who might lack the experience of leading, 1,600 sworn officers and a budget in the hundreds of millions of dollars. The fact that he's a native here, I think a lot of people do put a lot of stock in that. It makes it easier for them to trust someone like that.
Elliot, what was it like to participate in those online community forums where the public was able to ask questions to these finalists?
It was pretty nice. They held two public forums. They were each 3 hours long, and they let the public ask questions. A lot of them were about a lot of the questions were about what is each candidate going to do to involve the community in its policing efforts. Under the former chief Alfonso Morales, there are a lot of people who thought that the department kind of drifted from a community-oriented policing approach. And so there are a lot of people in Milwaukee, from City Hall down to, your average resident, who are very eager to see a chief who will invite the community into its process, and do things that way.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Elliot Hughes, who covers crime and public safety for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's giving us an update on Milwaukee's search for a new police chief, where that search is at. You can join in. Are you a resident of Milwaukee? What changes do you hope a new police chief can bring to the city? Have you been following the search? What of the three finalists stands out to you? Which one of the three finalists would stand out and you think would make the right selection here? 800-642-1234. Elliot, this has been just a crushing year, a record 172 homicides this year. Your Journal Sentinel keeps very close tabs on violent crime. What did the finalists say about their approach to limiting this violent crime?
Mm-hmm. It is something I asked all three candidates about. Mahaley and Aziz had pretty similar answers. They kind of stressed the need to get the help from other stakeholders. They framed it as an issue correctly that police can't handle all by themselves. They stressed the need to, talk to social workers, domestic violence professionals, religious leaders, and that kind of thing. For Davis, it was one of the few times where he focused his answer on investigative options. He did acknowledge that, domestic violence, which has been a major factor in the homicide rate this year in Milwaukee, he acknowledged that's a public health issue and it requires a lot of education and outreach. But he said that, solving gun violence may require a more labor-intensive investigative approach here, like throwing more resources at every shots fired incident, in order to piece together evidence against repeat offenders.
Chris Davis, the candidate from Portland. I want to ask you, too, what did you see in their approaches to drug violence and how they would approach drugs?
Yeah, each of them kind of de-emphasized and kind of backed away from, the traditional war on drugs approach, which is a pretty aggressive approach to dealing with the situation. It's very arrest heavy approach. They all said that, when it comes to addiction, that's a public health issue. That's something that public health officials need to be involved with. But they all said that there's still a place for the criminal justice system when it comes to people who are selling these drugs and profiting off of people's addiction.
What stood out to you during these interviews? How did the candidates distinguish themselves from one another?
Well, with Mahaley, he's been kind of pushing his local and federal connections. As a native here, he's been trying to get it across that he's familiar with a lot of the people that he would need to work with already. And he's expressed the fact that, as someone who's worked in the federal government, he has the connections that can get Milwaukee additional grant funding for more police officers and that kind of thing. Davis, on the other hand, he's portrayed himself as kind of a progressive police leader from a progressive police department. Described a lot of programs in Portland that have worked that he could bring here in Milwaukee. And then Aziz is someone who has really touted his community engagement efforts. He wants to bring, an athletics league, a police-sponsored youth athletics league here in Milwaukee. He wants to engage youth and change people's behaviors that way.
Elliot Hughes is a crime and public safety reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're looking at who will be the next police chief for the city. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing three finalists who are vying to be Milwaukee's next police chief in a challenging time for policing in America and no doubt a challenging time for policing in Milwaukee. The ACLU of Wisconsin wants the next chief to take on systemic racism and police brutality. What is job number one for the new chief? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Elliot Hughes reports on crime and public safety, and he's our guide. So, Elliot, you know, Milwaukee has been in a really tumultuous year with the protests over police brutality and racial profiling, stop and frisk policies over the years. What are community members wanting in a new chief to be able to reckon with what has happened in the past?
So as you alluded to, I mean, this chief is going to be operating in a post-George Floyd era. And so there's renewed emphasis to see a police department that is really stressing community relations above all. I think that is the chief concern among residents here. There are a lot of people who thought that the department strayed from that approach under the former chief, Alfonso Morales. So they want to be involved more in violence prevention efforts with the police department. But then there's also quite a bit of reform that I think people are hoping for. They want to see a department that is training officers to answer tense situations with de-escalation techniques rather than uses of force. Excuse me. They also want to see improved compliance with a court-mandated reform of the department's stop and frisk practices, which has been shown to disproportionately affect people of color. I think they also want to at least see some open-mindedness about just doing some contemporary police services differently. People want to see, they're interested in seeing the police department demilitarize some of its equipment, or perhaps allowing, non-sworn, unarmed individuals to respond to certain incidents, such as, like a fender bender or a mental health crisis.
Let's step back for a moment and look at the hiring body here, the Fire and Police Commission. They were accused by the department of violating the law. Two commissioners and its executive director all resigned in the middle of the search. What is happening with the commission at the commission level?
Yeah, it's been a really turbulent year for them. First of all, they have long suffered from chronic staff shortages. The way the commission is set up is there's usually seven voting members and then a staff of about 25 people to help them. And as of early November, they've had about 12 vacancies on a staff that should be about 25 people. And as you said, right now, they're missing their executive director. So throughout the year, they've struggled to complete some routine tasks and they've not gotten along at times. And so this process of finding a new chief began with a very controversial move to demote the former chief, Alfonso Morales, from chief to captain, which led to his retirement. He's since sued the city, and the city has even admitted that it didn't give Morales due process. But then even since then, there's been some continued drama. The commission at first announced the candidates would be interviewed exclusively in public formats. But then kind of at the last minute, they decided that they would add an additional round of interviews, which would be done privately with the commission away from public view. And they openly argued with each other when they made that decision. And the whole spectacle, it was such a bad look that it drew the concern of not just the mayor, but the entire 15-person common council here.
Not to mention that the people applying for this job and the finalists are watching all of this conflict as well.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, how they feel about it specifically, I don't know. I'm sure they're not willing to be brutally honest about it before being offered a job.
Yeah. These are their bosses after all.
Yeah. But it's bad timing when you're trying to court a new police chief that an entire city is pinning a lot of hopes on.
We're talking with Elliot Hughes, a crime and public safety reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, explaining developments in the process of hiring the next Milwaukee police chief. You can join in. Are you worried about potential cuts to the Milwaukee Police Department? How should the new chief deal with those cuts? Do you think that the search for a new chief is being rushed and needs to be delayed, as several Milwaukee elders have asked. 800-642-1234. Elliot, early last month, 7 Milwaukee Common Council members asked the commission to delay the search for a new chief. What was behind their concern?
A lot of that was fueled by the staff shortages that they've experienced so much. There's usually about 25 people there's 25 staff members who support the 7 voting members, and they're led by an executive director. And as of early November, they have had 12 vacancies, including that executive director position. And so because of that, there were seven common council members who wrote a letter very publicly asking the commission to delay this process because, all year long, they've kind of struggled to complete these routine tasks. And so these council members thought, now is not the right time to push forward with such a monumental decision as picking the next police chief. But the Fire and Police Commission politely declined that request. They saw no reason to delay, and they seem to be ready to select a name tomorrow.
You must be also watching that the Common Council approved a budget that will cut 120 police officers through attrition by the end of next year. What does that mean in terms of staffing for the next chief?
Yeah, it'll make things difficult. It's a lot of people don't like to hear that police officers, that those positions are being cut. And so it's going to put a lot of stress on the chief to either find new efficiencies with their patrol or to find more grant funding to fund more officers.
Is there more grant funding out there to be had?
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth debate about one specific grant in Milwaukee to fund an additional 30 officers. But it comes with various requirements with cooperating with federal agents. And that's drawn a lot of concern from common council members here. And so this has been a grant that Milwaukee has been approved to receive, but the city is reluctant to accept it because they feel like they need to vet these requirements with cooperating with federal officials a little bit more.
With all of the problems that have embroiled the commission this year, is there confidence? Do you sense there's confidence that the commission can make a good hiring decision?
I think there still is. I think a lot of people are worried, though, especially when they see when the interviews were about to begin, the Fire Police Commission was erupting in arguments with each other, and they were altering the selection process that they had laid out a month before. And I think that did shake the confidence of a lot of people. It certainly did with the Common Council. It really drew concern from them. But at the end of the day, they realize that these are three candidates who are qualified to take up the position, and they realize that this is an opportunity to start anew in Milwaukee. And I think there are a lot of people here who are eager to sincerely work with this new police chief and make things better here. And I think people welcome that opportunity.
Do we know any of the timeline in terms of when a new chief would be on the job? Or does that just vary from one candidate to the next?
I think that'll vary. Neither candidate has discussed publicly how soon they could take up the role.
Uh-huh.
The acting police chief right now, Michael Brunson, he plans to retire as soon as one can be installed. So I'm sure it will happen fairly quickly.
Elliot, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Elliot Hughes is a crime and public safety reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Coming up, we talk with an employee from Kroger and a grocery union representative about what it's been like in supermarkets during the pandemic and what protections these essential workers are seeking nearly 9 months into the pandemic. Do you work in a grocery store? What would you like to add and say about what it is like to be on the front lines? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Workers at the country's largest grocery store chain, Kroger, and other big retailers are calling on their employers to reinstate hazard pay and ramp up COVID safety precautions. Do you work retail or at a supermarket? What is work like for you in the pandemic? Do you know what you'll do if you test positive for COVID? Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. Melanie Meyer-Barthoff is political director and service director for United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1473, representing workers in Wisconsin. Nationwide, the UFCW represents 900,000 grocery employees. Melanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have Amy Schultz here, who is a Kroger employee in southeastern Wisconsin and a member of UFCW Local 1473 Union's executive board, as well as the union steward at her store. Amy, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me also.
Amy, can you put us in your footsteps, if you will, for a moment? What is it like to go to work at your store?
Well, in the beginning of the pandemic, it was so busy and crazy, but people were really like thanking us for being there, and people were a lot nicer than they had been. And as time has gone on, that caring has kind of gone away, and it's, you know, you never know. And people aren't wearing masks as much as they used to. And everyone's using the excuse that they have a health condition and they can't wear one. And it's pretty scary because you never know if you're going to get it or not.
Grocery store workers, you're interacting with customers every day, and within that eye contact range, what is it like enforcing a mask mandate in stores? What do you say?
It's hard because we politely try to remind people that you have to be wearing a mask in the store, and some people just say, I have a health condition, and keep walking. Some people start yelling at us. They make it political and say, you must have voted for so-and-so. And we don't look at it that way. We don't look at it as a political thing. We look at it as a safety issue for not just our employees, but other customers as well. We deal with hundreds of people a day, and the people that aren't wearing the masks are the ones that scare us the most.
Melanie, your union represents around 12,000 people in Wisconsin. Can you give us a snapshot of the kind of professions that members of your union work in?
Yes. So we are 12,000 members strong statewide, and our membership is pretty evenly split between workers in grocery retail stores and workers in food processing and meatpacking plants. And then we also have some of our membership who work in healthcare facilities, assisted living centers, and nursing homes as certified nurses' aides, dietary staff, housekeeping staff, and we also represent workers who work for insurance companies and banks and optical centers. But the majority of our membership is essential food workers in food production or grocery stores.
So a wide range of settings, but COVID can happen in any of those settings. Can you draw some parallels on what it is like to work in these areas, in the pandemic, but also a lot has changed over these months, 9 months now?
Absolutely. Every industry, you hit it right on the head. No matter what industry our members are working in, all of our members are essential workers. And so while we are very thankful that they've been able to continue working and receiving income, they are working in a hazardous environment. And so their workplaces have definitely changed. You walk into a packing plant, for example, and it is one-way aisles, markers on the floors, telling you to keep social distance, plexiglass keeping people separated, similar in our grocery stores. The plexiglass, the markers on the floors, changes in the way that we interact with customers to be more safe in the workplace, and changes with operations as well. So whether you're in a optical center setting or in a grocery store setting, changing the way that our members are performing their jobs so that they can maintain that distance from their coworkers and from their customers as well.
Amy, in this pandemic, some retailers have been making huge gains as their profits are soaring. Have you, as an essential worker, been able to have any type of bonus pay, or what has that been like?
We did have some bonus pay, and they called it hero pay back in the beginning of the pandemic, but they took that away, so we haven't gotten that. We've gotten a few, a couple $100 bonuses on our cards to use in the store. But as far as everyday raises or, you know, extra money for hazard pay, no, they took that away and we haven't gotten it back. And to be honest, conditions have just gotten worse because, like I said, as time has gone on, there's less people that are really actively staying 6 feet apart from one another. People don't care about wearing masks. I mean, there are still a lot of people that do wear masks and do care, but, you know, we still have so many to worry about that people just don't follow the rules right now.
We're talking about what it is like to be a frontline worker. Amy Schultz is a Kroger employee in southeastern Wisconsin on the executive board of UFCW Local 1473. Melanie Meyer-Barthoff here is political director and service director for Local 1473. Taking your questions as well about the pressing issues facing grocery store workers. Maybe you are an essential worker in another area, another facet. What is your union like, and how are they representing you in this moment? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Melanie, take us into meatpacking for a moment. Earlier this year, there were COVID outbreaks at meatpacking facilities across our state. What kind of concerns have workers expressed about preventing the spread of the virus in places where people are working very closely together?
Yeah. So obviously in a packing environment or even in a grocery retail environment where you are interacting in a grocery environment with hundreds of customers a day, in a packing plant, you are generally working in closer proximity and there's larger volumes of people in that environment. So pretty much across all industries, we're hearing just everyone wants to make it home to their and they want to be as safe as possible in the workplace. So we have worked so hard with all of our employers negotiating those safety protections for our members. So seeing things like plexiglass barriers on break room tables so that even in their break time, when there's large numbers of people in a break space, that they are separated, and also staggering breaks so that there are less people in one area at one time. And just anything that we can do, whether it's spacing people out on the production line or advocating for customers in a grocery environment to be wearing masks, we're doing everything that we can. And as a union, we are so fortunate to be able to represent our members because unfortunately there is no OSHA mandate specific to COVID-19, which really means that employers are not required to implement safety precautions specific to COVID-19. So we have been
You mean like OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, they're not coming in and seeing to make sure that you are putting these COVID safety precautions in place in your store?
No, they're not. So that's something a lot of people don't know, is that OSHA has failed to act regarding COVID-19. They have not put any specific guidance. They've issued guidance, but they have not issued any rules or mandates specific to COVID-19. So we as a union are playing a huge role in working with our employers and making sure that they're implementing actions that we feel are necessary for our membership. Things that you hear a lot about now, like temperature checks for employees coming into the workplace. Those are things that we were working with our employers very early on in the pandemic to implement in our workplaces to keep our members as safe as possible. So absolutely, OSHA needs to step in, but where they have not, our union has stepped in to protect our membership.
Amy, how is communication at your store, and by way of understanding any potential outbreaks, any outbreaks that have happened? I don't know if that has happened at your store, but how much transparency is there? How much do you know?
Well, we haven't had any outbreaks that were specific to our store, but we have had people out on because they tested positive or because they were in contact with someone. In the beginning, everyone, you know, wanted to know, well, who is it? Was I in contact with them? If they were in your specific department, you were told. But other than that, you know, for privacy reasons, we weren't told. And we have a lot of high school kids that work at our store, and a lot of them have been out on quarantine because they came in contact with other students that tested positive.
Have your staffing levels been strained, Amy?
Definitely, definitely. Because last week alone, we had quite a few people out on quarantine, and then we get yelled at by customers because we don't have enough cashiers open. And if we say, well, I'm very sorry, you know, we've had a lot of people quarantining, then they just roll their eyes at us.
Mm, wow. Have you had to work back-to-back shifts or take on extra hours?
Definitely. In the beginning, we worked long hours when we were getting slammed with everybody stocking up on things. And even now when people are out on quarantines or they're out with the because they tested positive, a lot of us stay longer or come in on extra shifts.
Yeah. Amy Schultz is a grocery store worker and on the executive board of Local 1473. Melanie Meyer-Bartoff is a director for United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1473. We're discussing pressure from frontline grocery store and retail workers who are seeking hazard pay and stricter cleaning standards amid the holiday season, what it looks like to work on the front lines. How does it feel to work there? What kind of precautions do you take when you leave home? Are you required to wear a mask at work? Do customers comply? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Kroger employee Amy Schultz. She's a member of UFCW Local 1473, serves on its executive board, and is the union steward at her grocery store. Melanie Meyer-Bartoff is political director, service director as well for UFCW Local 1473, representing workers in Wisconsin and Upper Michigan. Collectively, the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union represents 900,000 grocery workers. Let's take a call now. Jan is joining us from Oak Creek. Hi, Jan. What would you like to add?
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. I'd just like to ask, what could the general public do to help you people out? Because I just appreciate so much what you do. I pick up my groceries and stuff, and I will leave a tip because, you know, you can use all the money you can, but I know some places don't. But what can I do? You know, what can we do?
Yeah, Jan, that is a great question to ask. Amy, you first.
Thank you for your support, first off. If you're in the store, just please wear your mask and wear it correctly. There's so many people that are wearing a mask, but it's not even covering their nose and their mouth. And also give the cashiers and the baggers some space. The plexiglass isn't always in the right space for really to protect the cashier, and the bagger has none at all. So the most thing we ask for is wear your mask and give us some space.
Mm. Melanie, what would you like to add?
Yes. Thank you so much for that supportive comment. And I echo what Amy said. We just ask our customers, please wear your mask and remember that It may be 5 minutes or 25 minutes of your day, but your shopping environment is someone else's work environment. So please be mindful of that. And also, if you want to be supportive of our retail grocery members, you can do so on our Facebook page at UFCW 1473. We have a few resources there for you as well, including a petition that you can sign to support our efforts to reinstate hazard pay for our grocery members. We also have a UFCW campaign, Thank a Grocery Worker. So you can thank a grocery worker and give a shout out to one of our members there. Or when you're in the store, just say thank you, give a nice comment on the receipt, and be supportive of those members in every way that you can.
Melanie, the paid sick and family leave that Congress passed early in the pandemic, it expires at the end of the month. What is UFCW's stance on this? What are you asking for?
Well, one important thing first to note about the Families First Coronavirus legislation is that paid leave that supplies up to 2 weeks of paid leave for some employees actually excluded employers with more than 500 employees. So there were a lot of employers that we work with that were exempt from that. So that was one shortcoming with that. So our union has, again, negotiated and thankfully been able to secure paid leave for the majority of our members through our union negotiating. But really, workers need to have guaranteed paid time off for COVID-19. It is a work safety issue, and it is really a public health issue. Workers need to know that if they are symptomatic, if they need to quarantine due to close contact, if they're awaiting their own test results, or if they themselves test positive, they need to know that they have paid time off that they can take so that they're not suffering financially and so they're not put in the impossible position of having to choose between their paycheck or their health and the health of their family and coworkers.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Melanie Meyer-Bartoff, who is political and service director for UFCW Local 1473. Amy Schultz is a grocery store worker at a Kroger in the southeastern part of our state, member of UFCW Local 1473's Union Executive Board. We're talking about what essential workers are seeking months into the pandemic. Taking your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Ken is with us from Fond du Lac. Hi, Ken. What is on your mind?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, since the pandemic has hit, in grocery stores, you see a lot of different, like with the carts, you know, they're obviously, you're touching them. Some places are sanitizing them. Some places aren't. I mean, my wife is afraid to go into the store. So just wanting to know, like, is there some kind of mandate that's going to be rolled out or something that can help with making sure that these things are safe when you go in to use them? Because obviously a lot of people are using these things. So I'm just curious what, if there's anything going to be coming for that.
Yeah, Ken, thank you. Amy, what is your approach to the carts at your store?
We have some cart cleaning stations set up in the entranceways where you can take the spray and the cleaner, the paper towels, and clean your own cart when you come in the store.
Okay. Melanie, anything you'd like to share there about how to keep the carts clean?
The only thing I would add to Amy's comment is that, you know, the stores are doing the best that they can. And obviously they've got those stations there for customers to do it themselves. But as far as a mandate, I mean, the short answer is no, unless OSHA takes some action related to COVID-19 and there is something specific that comes down that mandates employers to take those actions, there will be no mandate. So right now, employers are doing the best that they can themselves to try to manage the cart situation and keep them sanitized, as well as the entire stores.
Amy, has your employer provided you and your fellow employees with PPE? I'm thinking like masks and hand sanitizer, or what is at your station that is readily available for safety and cleaning?
We are provided with masks every day. As far as hand sanitizer, we ran out of the hand sanitizer they provided employees months ago. So now it's kind of up to us to have our own hand sanitizer. And even as far as cleaning goes, there's not a whole lot of cleaning other than what we do ourselves. And we don't really have a lot of time to do that always either because we're so short-staffed and it's busy and there's other things that they want done first. I do agree with what Melanie says about OSHA. OSHA really does need to step in and make sure these stores are getting cleaned and that the plexiglass is in the right spots. Like right now in our store, the plexiglass that's in front of the cashier, it is directly in front of the cashier. But as soon as the customer moves to the spot where they pay, there's nothing separating the cashier and the customer at that point. And where the bagger stands, there's nothing protecting them whatsoever. So customers are standing within inches of the baggers. I really do think OSHA needs to step in and make sure we do have more things, more hand sanitizer, more cart cleaning, more plexiglass.
Melanie, has the union been talking with employers about this issue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we, throughout the pandemic, our union representatives have continued their servicing schedules. So they are still making contact with our members safely, of course, in their work sites so that any concerns we're made aware of, we are addressing immediately with that employer. So whether it's running out of a supply or in a plant environment, we have safety committees. So workers can literally go to their union steward, bring an issue, and that member will bring it immediately to the appropriate company representative. And then the union officials are also looped in so that we can make sure whatever the concern is, it's being addressed. But absolutely, in the absence of action by OSHA, our union has really stepped in and we are doing the groundwork of addressing safety concerns and making sure that employers are adequately protecting their workers, providing the PPE that's necessary. Our own union has worked to provide additional PPE such as face shields and hand sanitizers and things like that that can help to protect our members in the workplace. So absolutely, we are addressing those issues.
It makes me wonder what frontline workers, essential workers, are doing if they're not in a union and they don't have a union advocating for them.
Yes, that's a great point. And that's another reason why federal action or state action and some action by OSHA is so necessary. We need enforceable guidance so that everybody as a worker, regardless of where you're employed, knows that they are going to be as safe as possible in the workplace. And again, you're absolutely correct. In a non-union environment, there are no standards. There's not a union there to ensure that those protections are taking place. So there needs to be some action at a federal level to protect our country's workers.
Amy, we only have a few seconds left, but I want to ask you, what has the pandemic taught you about yourself in these times and how you function at work?
I feel I'm pretty resilient and I can adjust to changing situations. It's not always easy because sometimes you have to choose between if you have the sniffles in the morning, am I supposed to go to work? Am I not supposed to go to work? But yet we still need to get paid. It's hard, but we're all resilient there.
Thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Melanie Meyer-Bartoff is Political Director and Service Director for UFCW Local 1473. Amy Schultz, a grocery worker for a Kroger store in the southeastern part of our state, also on the union's executive board. Coming up next hour, it is Dan Rather, renowned journalist and former CBS National Evening News anchor. He joins us to discuss the current state and the future of America. Hope you can join us for that conversation. Stay with us. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.